This topic session is the 10th step as presented by the Young People's Intergroup and the Young People's Meetings of Greece. My name is Brian V. Our first speaker is Monica.
Hi. So that's
Take
it.
the floor.
Thank you. Take the floor. I feel like I'm on stage. My name is Monica, a compulsive eater, and I paid a high price to be in this seat. Believe you. I am a compulsive eater, a restrictor, a binger. You have it. I'm a compulsive person. I am the youngest of three children. I'm from New York. And my family were immigrants. They came to this country, United States, in 1920s. They came for a better life. Yes, they came for a better life. They came with excellent education. They came to find employment and to do the best that they could. They're a hardworking family and culturally very close to their background from where they came from. Since I was the youngest, my brother and sister are older than I am. And so they just kind of took me with them. You know, they just grabbed me and took me with them. And everything went for my sister and my brother. So I was the child they just kind of played with or just left alone. I became very, very lonely when I was young. And once I started school, it was a little difficult for me because my mother started working, so I became a latchkey child. My sister took care of me sometimes, but it was hard. And what we did after school is, you know what we did? We loved to eat. We loved to eat lots of pasta. And we would sit there, and I would watch TV, and I didn't have any concern about school, no concern whatsoever. And that wasn't good because it snowballed into some other kind of problem. Now, it was very, very difficult for me because everyone in my family, they were like, my sister was a valedictorian. My father was very smart. He did British ways of English. It was unbelievable. I started to develop eating problems and body image problems. My particular family, they wanted to fit in and look a certain way. I had a grandmother that lived with us. And she would put a clothespin on my nose to straighten up my nose. Either my nose wasn't correct, my hair wasn't correct, I didn't sit up straight, but I was also in parochial school. So parochial school had me doing all kinds of stunts. You know, you had to sit up, you had to kneel a certain way in church. It was sort of a turnoff. And that's exactly what I did, was turn off from school. My parents thought that something was wrong with me, but all I wanted to do was play with my dolls and eat. So it took me a while to, really find my way. I was in school for a while, and by the time I got to high school, I realized if I didn't buckle up with the work, that I would be left behind because not only was my family excelling in school. My environment, my friends were very, very smart. Everyone was the top of the class. I just didn't care. So I just taught myself. I realized I was a visual learner and I didn't process auditorily properly, but I could teach myself. So in those days, we had textbooks, and the textbooks, I could just follow the textbooks. The answers were in the back. And I taught myself, and I was able to pass the regents, and some of the regents I passed with a high score, so it was fine. But by the time I got to college, all of that lack of doing work in elementary school caught up with me. So I had a problem with eating. I would have all the food on my desk while I was trying to complete these papers, and I procrastinated the last minute, and it was very, very difficult. Oh, my youth was difficult when it came to food. I would eat and then I would do a little bit of work and then I would sleep. My life was totally, totally unmanageable. I was looking, I guess, love, for love. I was looking for a husband in college somehow. I didn't get that kind of nurturing. My parents were unavailable. My grandmother was unavailable. My brother and sister were out of my age range. So where was I going? Nowhere, but I knew I had to pass and get out of college. So I did. But before I graduated, I had a friend that knocked on my door and she said, "Monica, I have something for you." And I'm like, "What is she talking about? I have a lot of problems. The whole thing of going up and down, yo-yoing, I would eat and binge, and then I would starve myself. I remember sometimes I wouldn't eat for a week. I would lose the weight because, when you're 19 and 20, you could lose the weight, but you can gain it plus 5 more pounds. It was horrible. She told me about Overeaters Anonymous. And I joined Overeaters Anonymous, I must say, 50 years ago. I looked at the date the other day, New Year's. I said, "This is 2024. Guess what? I graduated from college in 19, what's it, 74. Yeah. So 50 years, but I went in for a diet. I went in for a diet, and that's what I got. I lost the weight. I stayed skinny for several years. And 10 years later, I met my husband. And then it started becoming difficult because I stayed small because I did all the assignments. I did what I was supposed to do. I'm a parochial school product. I was fine. So having a relationship, having kids, because I was a little older, it was difficult. So I joined, well, I kept going to meetings, but it was a little different way. I joined HOW. HOW. And that is a way of looking at OA. I think they still may exist. The H is honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. Okay. And I really believe that honesty was the foundation of me really kind of moving this train. So for 10 years, I did that. And then after 9/11, we lost our room. We lost our room because I live on Long Island and it was devastating. People just got, it was like after the pandemic, people still are not right. But after 9/11, people in New York, Long Island, they lost relatives. It was really horrible. It kind of took the guts out of us. So I had to look for another place and another group. And that was devastating because OA was my home. It was like, welcome home. They were right there for me, getting all the nurturing that I never got before. So I started again, not really started, but I had to move to a different location because we all did, just like being on Zoom. So I got to this place, and it's amazing because all of those years I never did a step four, but I got this sponsor who was new, and she did her step four, and she said, "I'll sponsor you, and you have to do a step four." I said, "Me? I am perfect. Not perfect, but I'm a nice girl." Character defects, it sounds like something psychological, like what's wrong with me? Well, I sat there, and when I did a step four with her, it was pages and pages. But kind of speeding this up again, because I've been in programs so long, there was so much information I would love to give you and to touch somebody's soul today about this program. But the focus is on step 10. And step 10 is we continue, it's almost like a four, to take personal inventory. And when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I love the spiritual principles. The spiritual principle of step 10 is perseverance. Now, if I haven't persevered, I don't know who is. I have the gift of perseverance. I haven't left the program. Abstinence is number one. I don't negotiate with my abstinence. It's so important in order for me to get me mentally fit. Because I have a lot of issues, and in 50 years, life probably has served me well. Oh, please help me, Lord. But anyway, step 10 is basically searching out feelings that need attention, like anger, resentment, and fear. Looking for negative character traits like low self-esteem, self-centeredness, that's me, and envy. I never thought I was self-centered. Oh, yeah? Okay. Find a different perspective on old ways of thinking. How can I change? Oh my goodness. Practicing gratitude, taking responsibility for myself. That's one thing that I learned in step 4, that, I have to be responsible for my behavior. There are many ways to practice step 10. We have a study guidebook that shows you how to do a spot check or a summary worksheet, which is like a long fourth step. Or you can use the literature in the big book. If you look on page 84 and 85, it will give you information on step 10. I love the 12 and 12 book. It tells you all about step 10. And there's also a workshop and study guide with a graphic organizer. Now, remember, I told you I was a visual learner. So those graphic visual organizers are just up my alley. I'm able to just put in place in all my emotions and put it together. Now, I'm going to go through a spot check. Now, the key to step 10 is repetition. Okay? Repetition and planning. I'm still not perfect. I'm imperfectly perfect. I always hear these little sayings and they help me. I'm still moving along with step 10, but I'm telling you, I have so many issues going on at the same time because at my age, they serve you well. And I need step 10s. So I said it's repetition and practice. So if you take step 10, the 6 previous steps, you combine them all to make step 10. So you have step 4 and 5 together. You have 6 and 7 and 8 and 9. 4. Let's take a problem that I have. Okay. You want to hear my problem? My problem was I didn't want to do this today. I was resentful. My old sponsor, she said, "Oh, you could do it. Come on." And then she laughs. But in OA, you always have to say, "Yes, I'll help out." So here I am. So you look for the aspects that threaten you. So what threatened me? My pride. I'm afraid of what other people are going to think about me. Oh my goodness, I'm not from that family, remember? I'm afraid you may say, "Oh, she's just a dummy." My self-esteem at times is very, very low. And I always sort of come back to it. Okay, so what was my part in it? I could have told her no. I could have told her no. I have a funeral to go to. I have this to do, my husband's birthday. I could have said no. What were the ne negative character traits that I was exhibiting? Unrealistic expectations. Unrealistic expectations. Fear. Fear of falling on my, you know what? Self-esteem and self-centeredness, I think, was the most important thing. Self-centeredness is saying, is this about me? Is this about me? Or is it about somebody in that screen, some one person who would be able to understand that they want to change their life? They want to be abstinent and they want to change their mental and physical and spiritual way of living. Okay, so 4 and 5, you admit it to someone. I know I go to therapy. I tell him everything. I tell my sponsor. I tell my buddies. I admit it. And the foundation of step one is honesty, which is, yeah, honesty. So 6 and 7, it says, do, no, wait, 6 is, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And the spiritual principle is willingness. And the willingness I've heard with shares, somebody says, you do what you don't want to do. You do what you don't want to do. So I'm doing something I don't want to do. Okay. I had some readings to go with that, but I'll just kind of finish up. Step 7 is humility, the principle, and there's no one above or below me in this crazy ladder of that we live in. And with step 7, I also have to do acceptance. Acceptance has helped me grow and change as a person. It's unbelievable. There's nobody out there that's better than me, and I'm not better than anybody else. And then who have I harmed? Step 8 and 9, it's me. I have to ask, step 9, forgiveness of myself. I have to find certain things that will help me. I had so much, I overdo it, but I had so many things to talk to you about. But especially with this third step prayer, relieve me of the bondage of self. Step 10 will help you to relieve you from the bondage of self. You pray over this when you do a step seven. You this seventh step prayer, my creator, I am now willing, remember, willing to do things you don't want to do, to change. And that's all there is. I had a lot of other readings, but I didn't want to do this in the first place. No, I'm just kidding. It's all right. It's all right. I hope I said something that will enlighten you today. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Monica. And I'm sure there'll be time to get back to the readings and
Sure.
questions and answers. Our next speaker is Tony B.
Good morning, you guys. Good morning. I feel very blessed to have the privilege to be here this morning to share with you guys, to share my experience, strength, and hope. And it's in hope that I'm able to touch one of you guys out there with a little bit of information that can help you maintain your abstinence, that can help you grow your recovery. And that can help you get a better view in a more positive aspect of life. In other words, that can better your day. This is about step 10. So I'm going to start off with step 10 to give a premise of what we're talking about. And in saying this, I'm going to read the step, though you know it, you've heard it already today. And I'm going to read the first sentence of this chapter of step 10, the 12-12. That's OA, 12 steps, 12 traditions. It says, step 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we are wrong, promptly admit it. That's step 10. Okay? The first line of step 10 says, many of us have come to Overeaters Anonymous after years of pursuing short-term solutions to a long-term problem of compulsive using. I'm sure if you've been in this room for a while, you've been dealing with 12-step programs, you've heard the expression, it's a marathon, not a sprint. Embrace the journey. Don't focus so much on the goal. That is in a key eyesight of what I had to break down in order to get this program to work for me. Give you a little background. I've been in LA since 2010. It wasn't hard for me to wrap my mind around 12-step programs. I'm a dual 12-stepper. Okay. I've been in OA since 2010, but I've been in my other 12-step program since actually about 30 years, since 1994, 90, 93, around that time. It's when I got clean. So I know of recovery and I know how the steps worked, and it was very real. What I did not realize, and what many people know, is if you get clean, if you clean up your addiction, if you're an addict and you do what it takes not to use your whatever you're addicted to, your addiction itself doesn't actually leave your system. Principle behind that we call in the other program is arrested. It's not overtaking you. You're able to manage your lifestyle, your personality, without your addiction consuming you. So, in saying that, my OA addiction was always hidden in my life. I grew up with a very, nonchalant attitude. Food in the refrigerator was a blessing. You always went for seconds if you could have it. Dessert. You ate every day for dessert. Dessert was the highlight of the meal. So, overportioning your plate, that was just normal. There were so many things that when it came to eating that as I did not know until I was well in my 40s, that it wasn't a healthy way to eat. I was pretty much over 100 pounds over my weight. Over the weight I would say I desired to be. And when I first got involved with the program in 2010, I actually got clean My wife and I joined together, and you know, I did lose between the both of us. We lost enough for a human being. We lost 180 pounds between the both of us. We did this so we could have a child. There was something that was told to my wife, spiritually and personally, that if she lost weight, she could probably get pregnant. We really wanted to have a child, so we took the steps to make that happen. And you know, our higher power was faithful. My wife got pregnant, and we do have a 12-year-old son to this day. Now, the reality of this is my wife and I kind of went two different directions afterwards. Not so much as parents, not so much as marriage, we're still together as far as the program. My wife was tied in the program up until she had a child. She didn't just up, break, or walk away. It didn't happen. But she kind of, there wasn't as much hunger for her to find recovery as it was for her to be a mother. So little things happened, like she kind of lost ties with her sponsor. She really wasn't staying connected as far as making a phone call. I say this to make a point. I had history in the 12-step program. So I knew to stay connected. I knew enough how the program worked. What I really didn't know, and what I had to kind of learn on my own, to make, you know, we both wind up getting the weight back gradually. I didn't. I had to make this program my own, not just 12-stepping, not just 12 steps as I thought. I had to make OA my own, and that wasn't easy. Relapse was a very real concept when it came to OA. When I went to my other 12-step program, I got clean. I was desperate. I hit bottom, and I kind of ran and never really looked back. That was not the case when it came to. And I also want to make this point because it kind of summarized the idea of a long journey in itself and continued perseverance, as we heard today already. It is what step 10 is all about. Step 10 had stronger roots in me. When it came to my other 12-step program, that didn't really happen until I was in my teenage years. And that only lasted for about 10 or 12 years of my life that I was in heavy and addictive nature of that in that program. But when it came to overeating or eating with a compulsive eating, that happened around three or four. And it happened all the way for 40 years until I was in my 40s. And it was natural. I didn't know I was doing anything wrong. The aha moment for me in OA is when I was in a meeting. And someone said, you just hear these cliches in meetings, you just hear these aha moments because they don't know. They're always telling you these pure nuggets of truth. They're just sharing their experience, truth, and hope. They're not trying to find, you know, they're not trying to therapeutically solve your problem. They are just speaking. This speaker said, you know, and he just made a concept. It just made sense. If you sat down and ate a four-course meal and you got up and walked away, and 15, 20 minutes later, you were still hungry, that's not hunger. That's not hunger. There's something else going on down there. And when he said this, I was like, you mean, no? I was like, wow. He goes, yeah, you're, he goes, you need to find out what you're really feeling and why you feel that way. And it's like, my body lies to me? You know, of course, if I'm hungry, I'm hungry. I need food. Why else would I be hungry? I never, ever, ever had any other concept of being hungry otherwise than I need food. It wasn't an emotional thing. Emotional thing was a spiritual thing. Ah. Spiritual program, 12 steps, addictive, deals with you physically, deals with you mentally, deals with you emotionally, deals with you spiritually. I was blind from that. The idea that my body could lie to me, the nerves of it, you know what I'm saying? It never crossed my mind. So, and I'm going to tell you, you know, 12 steps is, you know, we keep coming back and forth, and as you hear many times, a lot of people come into program as another form of the diet. Short-term resolutions of diet, you know, here is, you know, losing weight. And let me put what I'm doing here. We're talking about step 10 in this meeting. And my story is diets was a bunch of short-term sprints. That's how it worked for me. You know, diets were, you know, I lost weight and I gained it. I lost weight and it came back. It was never a consistent marathon. It never gelled up. So the idea, and that's why I started off with that sentence, constantly looking for short-term solutions for a long-term problem. That resonated with me. Because as I may feel with a lot of you, coming to terms that diet just wasn't going to work for you was probably a hard thing to come up with. I know it was for me. So I had to find a food plan that made sense. Now, since then, I managed to go over the 10 years that I've been here, two main sponsors. And as you can see, the obvious elephant in the room here, men in this particular program, OA, is a little scarce, to put it nicely. You get a good relationship with another man who takes your program specifically in there, and they're working the 12 steps when it comes to their addiction to food, and you got a good thing going on there. So I had a sponsor when I came in 2010, and he was my sponsor for 10 years. And it was in February of 2020, unfortunately, my sponsor passed away. It was during the top of the epidemic. It wasn't because of COVID he passed. He had other medical conditions, but he did pass when we was all going to hibernation for him. And I totally got pulled from the meetings that I was going to. We couldn't meet in person. So I totally had to rely on some network of people. And when I realized when he passed away was I really didn't have anybody, because when I went to the room and heard everybody's experience and hope and went to my other meetings, the gender issue wasn't an issue until I really didn't have another male to bond with. Then it became an issue. So I would tell you something, in local areas, other men in the program may be scarce, but nationwide, when I opened up that OA men, man, it opened up a library for me. It was beautiful. Nationwide, men have a strong recovery in this program. So to make a long story short, I started to connect to meetings like this on Zoom. I did it during the beginning of the pandemic. I did it because I knew I needed to have a sponsor. I needed to have a sponsor in OA. I knew that. So I did. I was able to find one. We've never met in person, but I do have a sponsor who's worked with me through steps. He's worked with me through traditions. He kicked it off with me. I heard my sponsor speak on a Zoom meeting. He was doing a speaker meeting. It was a man's meeting. And the man opened up the meeting with a song. He started singing. And when I saw that intimacy from another man, I said, that man is something I need to get to know. I go, that's the type of person I need to be my sponsor. He lives in Indiana. I live here in Florida. I got his number. I called. And like I said, we've been together ever since. So I do have that relationship. He's worked with me. But in doing that, he brought me through something that was very hard for me. He brought me through something, and I'm going to kind of summarize this. I'm looking at my time here. He brought me through the transition of understanding a food plan and not a diet. And to make a long story short, my weight's never my business. At this point, I don't even know what I weigh. If I lose weight, it is. It's none of my business. In a sense, my food plan, I call it, is mindful eating. I have a love-hate relationship. But the food plan I am, it doesn't restrict me to eat. I can eat whatever as long as I eat in moderation. I as long as I'm not compulsively eating. Trust me, I know when I'm compulsively eating. I know when I used to palace off a whole bag of chips. It was obvious when I was eating the whole pizza. People don't buy pizzas to eat the whole pizza. It wasn't when I was first getting clean as far as measuring the food and portion control, but I know what a decent plate of food looks like. I know how to walk away from the table when I'm full, and I don't need to finish everything on the plate. This is the type of food plan I have. And it came from when I'm going to, in my summary closing this up, it came from a series of a personal inventory, getting a sponsor, doing relationships, and getting to know who I was when it came to food. I'm going to leave this little tool with you. It's a tool. This is a tool that's up in the 12-step program. It's a tool that's helped me tremendously. It's a tool of writing. It may not come easy for you. It is. Some people don't like to read. Everybody's got their gifts. Everybody's got their perks. I would tell you, writing is very therapeutic. Okay, it's a pure method of doing. You can just, you, it's a pure method of dealing with what's going on inside. You can do something that's as serious as a daily journal. You don't have to write every daily. You just need to write regularly. You just need to check in once in a while. Step 10, and my short interpretation is in this last minute. is to scale up step four. That the first three steps are inner. And then you find out what's inside of you that you need to get rid of, step four, and you reach out. You connect with other people. You don't connect to another human being. You hit step four and five. You start removing that stuff, character defects that you need to get rid of in order for you to live better and be in harmony with the rest of the race. And you continue to do that on a regular basis, step 10. Step 10 is daily inventory on a regular basis so that you can continue what you need to do to maintain your abstinence. It's very clean. It's very pure. And I appreciate you guys listening. It was great for me to sit here and share that. And I really hope you have a great day.
Thank you. Thank you to our speakers, Monica and Tony. So this question is to Monica. What were the readings regarding step six that you mentioned?
Oh, okay. Hi. Step six is probably, I'm going to read from the 12 of 12. And the thing about reading, you always hear the terms doing the work. And it's important. It comes and goes. But I go to step meetings and we read step six. And I saw and I heard willingness in a different way. And on page 47, I'll just read you a little bit of it. It says, being entirely ready means that we firmly turn our backs on the old self-destructive behaviors and make every effort to live by the principles embodied in the 12 steps. Trying to practice the new thinking and behaviors to the best of our ability shows our true willingness to change. And I ask myself, how desperate am I to be happy? Because I've used food to comfort me and it didn't work. And what I've done is I picked up other behaviors like constantly cleaning, constant doing whatever. So I'm saying, what is it? And I just love this program because you can keep digging and digging. Tony was saying self-awareness, and you could find that. But when I read that, it says, become entirely ready for this miracle of release. And I would hear people say miracle, okay, right, to release, to happen to us, no matter what it may cost us, no matter what in our lives may change. And I thought it would cost me sort of embarrassment not to be perfect in doing this today. So I had to let that go and have the faith of my higher power and just go ahead. And I look at it, if I do a 10th step tonight, I could always say, okay, God was speaking to me, but I wasn't listening. He said, you have entirely too much. If you stick to one little thing, it'll be better. So I'm learning all the time. Thank you. And I also had something on chapter seven, but that's for another time. Thank you for the question.
Question for Monica. How could a person use step 10 or spot check inventory to address flashback memories, specifically regarding remorse or regret?
That's a hard one. And I have hard questions in my life also. And that's where I go for my higher power. And when I see people who are very wise in program, but using this, I would write about it. Tony explained about putting the pencil to the paper and write. And you're not going to get the answer in the beginning, but continue writing, because the first paragraph of step 10 in the 12 and 12 says repetition. And I had a situation this past year. I told you I was one of three. I lost my sister and my brother. And I had used program to accept my brother because he became very successful and very narcissistic. And I didn't like him. He was a mean person. But when he died, well, before he died, I accepted him. This is who he is. Let it go. I love my brother. Everything's fine, just like they tell you to do, right? I accepted him for years and years. But when he died, I had to realize that he's never going to be that loving big brother. He's dead. So I'm like, it left me so empty, you know, and I kind of wrote on it. And there, if you take your time, because I'm a very anxious person, but if you take your time and you slowly work on it, you may have to leave it and then come back. The part I had to do was to love my brother, even though, you know, he wasn't there for me. But that's a hard one, but I would write and I would take it. Listen, I've been here 50 years. It's taken me a while. And some of you I can see on the screen that I know they've been here for a while too. So this is, you know, life isn't easy. Sometimes we have flashbacks. I have flashbacks, you know, in my when I sleep at night, and I keep asking God, please help me. And I keep saying to myself, well, if I don't get any better with this stream of conscious thoughts, you know, maybe I'm going to have to take medication. Listen, at my age, people are leaving us, and I'm in that mode, okay? And I feel my husband, I'm also a caregiver for my husband. I feel that we have to change. And this is something you don't like. So I would try it. I would write. And, you know, just do the best you can, especially with whatever higher power that you have. They'll tell you. And usually intuitively, the higher power tells you. But we don't listen because we have such a willful way about us. You know, thank you.
Tell me, do you have anything to add to how to address flashback memories in step 10 regarding remorse and regret?
Yeah, ironically, Monica, it's funny that we both speak, and I told you my sponsor died in 2020, but January of last year, my brother died. And my brother was 7 years younger than me, and he died. He didn't even reach 50 years old. And the thing about this story is you could take the similarity and the differences. I don't know the right word. We were brothers, we were friends, but there was a wedge between me and my brother, and that wedge went into the grave. In other words, it wasn't resolved when he died. So there was someone close to my life, and I'm still to this day analyzing things when it comes to my brother. My mom has mentioned to me, let it go, you know, let the whole thing go. My brother became home. My brother was homeless when he passed away. And it was very hard with him. I have a wife and kid, and I live in a house, not a big house, but it's for my wife and kid. And it was just so hard. It was just beyond him why he, like, why the world wouldn't take him in. It wasn't just me. You don't know him. So I'm not, you know, I'm leaving out a lot of details, but he had a lot of resentment towards his family. And it was, like I said, towards his mom, dad, and all of us. And all that went with him when he passed away. And I wouldn't say we're left with pieces because we all saw the same thing with him. But we all had to deal with that grief of knowing that someone close to our life, you know, left us with a huge emotional focus is the right word. And that's where the 12 step comes in, the focus, you know, or something of that concept. Do you eat over it? Where do you find the comfort? Because even when you start talking about it, it's one of those things they really don't get it. And even I'm talking to you, I know you don't know him. You really have to know my brother to kind of get where I'm coming from. But you can't get the concept of what it might mean that I might want to eat over it just for comfort. And you understand that. Otherwise, we wouldn't be in this room together. That's the whole point of these meetings, that you can relate to that aspect of my pain. We all can. There's a universal empathy going on here. So, you know, being able to get in touch, you know, I talked about writing, but another good way of just dealing with step 10 is peer relationships, one-on-one. Having, we talk about life sources, but having relationships, I get a lot out of just coming to meetings and just listening to people's stories. It's like we all are, it's like whatever genre you want, you might want to talk about sci-fi, maybe romance, I don't know, Western, whatever kind of genre of a book you want. Imagine that we are all in the same genre telling a story. There's
Indeed.
commonalities that we're going to all have and we could all connect with that's not with everybody else in the world. You know what I'm saying? And I get, man, I get a tremendous growth. And I take daily inventory. And my biggest thing, I try, and I'll end it with this. I try to listen non-judgmental. When I come to a 12-step meeting, the first thing I really want to do is stop judging what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing. Oh, he's not talking right now. I would never do that. Don't, that's not the way. Come with an open mind. And I guarantee you can identify. Otherwise, why are you in this meeting? We're here for that. I'll leave it like that. That is a good way to work through the grieving period and pain.
The next question, and probably our last question, we have 5 minutes left. And this is directed to Tony. Does the fact that you and your wife went on different recovery tracks cause issues, specifically to the 10th step?
Wow. Specifically to the 10th step. My wife and I, we got, it's November's anniversary. We just celebrated 19 years. So my son came into life when he was hit going towards 10 years. So we have a history together as marriage is still. I say that because as in life, as in marriage, we have our, we have our good days and bad days. There are things that my wife resents about me, that goes way back that I don't even remember. It is a concept. I'm not trying to get biblical on you here, but it is a concept of when you got someone in your life that you're dealing with on a daily basis, and you know their characteristics, and you know their par defects, and you know what they're good at, and you know what they're not going to change. It's not necessarily keeping records of wrongs. It's being a reality. Another person's going to do the same wrong thing. So you have to learn how to forgive that person on that level and be all right with that. And saying that, pertaining to this question, there was resentment when we went on two different paths. I have to be black and white honest with that. Have I ever approached my wife with this resentment? There's not a need to. My recovery is my business. That's a judgment statement. You know what I'm saying? Who am I to tell her where she's right with her higher power? That's for her to deal with. I am not here that, if I don't judge straight, that's a wrong way to look at it. But heck yeah, there was resentment because I knew that she was my lifeline, and that was shadow because I only had really her and my sponsor. It was to me, that was a strong foundation. The one male sponsor in the meeting with all these other women and my wife. I didn't, I thought that's all I needed. And I found out that I needed a lot more if I really wanted to get to the bottom line with my addiction too. But as far as the 10th step, I communicated. I don't think I've ever was blunt about it, like I just said to you guys, as far as the resentment. But I process this with my wife, in a sensitive way. It really, to be totally honest with you, she said recently, and I will end it with this, because it was something we did together. We've done things together, And this was a spiritual thing we did together. And there's not too many spiritual things outside of actually getting married, becoming parents, in a sense that we actually did together, besides this program. That's why it meant so much to me. We both have our spiritual walks. She prays on her time, she reads on her time, I do it my way. And we unite on our faith, but we kind of found recovery together. So we talk about it. It's part of our story, it's part of our history. There's no need to bring up a resentment in our conversations. Thank you. Well.